Blog Talk Radio.
I just realized that my mic was on mute. I had it on mute for a while because everybody in the house was running around getting ready to leave, making noise, and so I turned on the mute and forgot to shut it off. Well, I'm here, folks, and I may be 9 minutes late, but hey, at least I'm here. But this whole thing about the learner emails being lost, they're not lost, folks. And I know the first part of this was totally missing, but the whole gist of the thing is that, you know, Washington is saying that 2 years' worth of learner emails and emails from her and from other people in Washington are gone because of a who you are. If you have a business, and there's none bigger than the U.S. government, if you have a business and you run your business through computers, which the government does, you back things up. I heard a guy on the Rush Limbaugh show a couple of weeks discussing this very thing. He worked for a data surveillance company for several years, and he said they backed up their computers daily and then weekly took the backups and put them on tape and stored them in another place. Government has to do this. You got to know they do this. Those emails are there. The Democrats are just trying to cover somebody's ass and make it so that their people don't get hurt. And that's just the way it is. You know, and Ted Cruz and Mike Lee and those are shaking up the place. They're Chuck Schumer and John Kerry and Charles Rangel, they're all just going ape crazy over this because there are new people in there who won't shut up like they're supposed to. There are new people in there who won't shut up like they have always done. But that's neither here nor there. That I didn't want to do, but telling you that conservativenationmedia.com is making some changes, and one of those changes is Inside Tennessee with Dave Vance, which now airs on Tuesdays. Tennessee's issues are spreading out all over America, and Dave Vance brings his veterans' insight and most informative guests to Inside Tennessee every Tuesday. So make sure to check him out. Brought to you by Tennessee Action Council. Inside Tennessee on Tuesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. And I listen to Mark Levin as often as possible. And a few days ago, he had an audio a former liberal Democrat governor of Colorado, State Colorado, Dick Lamb, from October 18th of 2003, when he was right for once and told of his 8-point plan to destroy America. And this is something that really needs to be listened to, folks, because I'll tell you, listen to these after a little introduction there with Mark Levin, and you tell me how many of these points have already happened, because I've seen them all.
I'm going to play this for you because there is a stunning news story at Breitbart where Senator Sessions and his staff point out that fully 98% of individuals deported from the United States last year were either criminals, apprehended while illegally crossing the border, or have been previously deported. So in other words, they're not deporting anybody unless they're criminals, they've been previously deported, or they turn them away at the border. Once they get into the interior of the United States, the overwhelming majority of them are not removed. This is a huge story, which is being completely ignored, except by me. Now, I want to give this some context. A couple of times in the past, I've read to you a transcript of a short speech that was given by former liberal Democrat governor of Colorado, Dick Lamb, a liberal Democrat. And at this particular event, he was introduced by Victor Davis Hanson, who has written a magnificent book. It's written several years ago, actually, called Mexifornia. And the title, you know, gives away the substance of the book. But before I get into the specifics of what Obama is doing to this country, I want you to hear not me reading what Dick Lamb said in October 2003, but I want you to hear what Dick Lamb himself said. I really want you to listen to this. Turn up the volume, and here you have a former governor who really, really gets it. Again, a liberal Democrat. And he calls it my plan to destroy America. My plan to destroy America. And a hat tip to our partners at FAIR who provided this to me, and this has never been played before. Cut one, go.
I would like to share with you my plan to destroy America. If you think, and some do, that America is too smug, too rich, too self-satisfied, not diverse enough, too white bread, I have this plan. Toynbee, you know, said that all great nations rise and they all fall. And he said, and the autopsy of history is all great nations commit suicide. So here's my plan, 8 parts. Number one, I'd make it a bilingual, bicultural country. History shows us that no bilingual, bicultural country lives at peace with itself. There's not one, I believe, that doesn't exist with an incredible amount of tension. And conflict, if not civil war. My second part of my plan would be to invent something called multiculturalism. This would be 2 parts. Number one, I would say that all cultures are created equal. It would make no difference and make it impossible to talk about such things as culture. And the second one is that I would really try very hard to make people continue their cultural identity. I would replace the melting pot with the salad bowl. My third part of my plan would be to make the fastest growing demographic group in that country the least educated. I would add a second underclass to the first underclass, unassimilated, undereducated, antagonistic, and then I'd have 50% of them drop out of school, not graduate from high school. The fourth part of my plan would be to get the big foundations to fund, and big business to fund these efforts with lots of money. I would invest in ethnic identity and victimology. I would get them to think about their lack of success was only the fault of the majority. I would start a grievance industry. The fifth part of my plan is I would develop dual citizenship. I would promise people actually divided loyalties, allow them to vote for both Vicente Fox and George Bush. The sixth part, and this is important, I would place all of these subjects off limits. I would make it taboo to talk about, actually, or criticize this whole thing. I would make it come up with a word like heretic used to be 200 years ago. Let's say we call it racist. And I would try to accuse anybody of this that would object to my ideas. My seventh part then, I would make it impossible to enforce our immigration laws. I would develop a mantra, let's call it this, that because immigration has been good in the past for America, it will continue to be good in the future. My eighth and last part, and it's important, is I would censor this book. This man is dangerous. He's on to my plan.
And he's pointing to our friend Victor Davis Hanson in his book, Mexifornia, where he lays out the case. This is 10.5 years ago where he gave this speech. And he was right on, wasn't he?
Yeah, and in the chat room, my guests in there, he's saying his keyboard is sticking, but he said he is reading the Obama game plan. Well, it was read, actually, in October of 2003. And it was totally prophetic because here we are listening to this liberal Democrat telling of the things that need to be done to destroy this nation and how many of these things have been done already. And to me, it's almost every one of them. And if they haven't, they'll get to it soon enough. They're working overtime to get rid of everything. And I'm running a little bit long on everything here. I've got to go with a break right at the moment. I'm a couple minutes late on that, so I'll be right back.
80 million voters can pull the wrong lever, and it's still the wrong lever.
Americans have known Tennessee as the volunteer state since the War of 1812. Now, Tennessee is leading the way in another major conflict, the war to keep America's identity, values, and freedoms intact. Even if you've never walked in Memphis or hiked the Blue Ridge Mountains, if you respect traditional American values, you should know about the Tennessee Action Council. Tennessee Action Council fights to preserve American values, defend our way of life, and protect the U.S. Constitution. This isn't just Tennessee's battle. It affects every American who loves our country and wants to pass the real America, unstained by progressive liberalism, along to future generations. No matter where you are in this magnificent country of ours, Tennessee Action Council is on your side and on America's side. Go to TN4Action.com. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com to volunteer for Tennessee and America. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com to stand for America now.
Hey everybody, Rachel Ray here. Nothing puts a bigger smile on my face than cooking up a big meal for family and friends. But there's not enough room at my table for the 17 million kids in America who are struggling with hunger. These children, that's one out of every five, often have to skip meals because there's just nothing to eat in the kitchen. Yet there's more than enough healthy, nutritious food produced right here in America to feed every last hungry child. If only there was a way to get it to them. That's why the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks collects surplus food to give hope to hungry kids and their families all across our country. But they can't do it without your help. Join me in supporting Feeding America at your local food bank and at feedingamerica.org. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're Feeding America.
A message from Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Listening to ConservativeNationMedia.com and the new White Conservatism Radio Show, and I'm Robert Garding. Our call-in number is 718-305-7176. One of my friends from the blog that I read is Douglas V. Gibbs, and he writes on political pistachio, and he wrote a great article on what gay marriage thing really means to America. It's long, and it will take several sections of this show, so I will read, and I plan to read it all because it is important. I received a phone call yesterday from my enthusiastic mom after she read a commentary about the Book of Acts in the Bible. The commentator wrote that during the transition of the early Christians from Old Covenant legalism to New Covenant grace through Jesus Christ, Rome was going through a transition as well. Rome was becoming a tyranny. And though at that point, much of the local administration of the government was handled by the local government. Centralized, consolidated, the imperial government was beginning to take on more and more responsibility regarding local issues. Rome did not begin as an empire. Rome began as a republic. But over time, the Roman Republic transitioned itself from a republic to a democracy to an oligarchy, and finally a totalitarian empire. Now, does this sound familiar here? I know I've been watching what America's been doing for the past 30 or 40 years now, and this just rings a bell. This is going on here in the United States. And it goes on. He said, this transition was not instant. It happened incrementally, which is what it's been doing here until just lately. And the key in regards to the big picture of it all was changing the atmosphere from the central government handling external issues and local government handling internal issues to the central government intruding upon all issues, including local laws and customs. The United States was founded as a republic, and the system was designed to be similar to those that existed in Rome, Slovenia, and countries that prospered under the Saxon system of individual centric government. The federal government was designed to handle external issues. The states were supposed to handle state issues, and local governments were expected to handle the community issues. State sovereignty became a valuable key to the success of the United States, not only serving to handle internal issues, but also serving to act as a check and balance against the central government that could potentially become a tyranny if allowed to insert itself into local issues. Freedom of religion was a lure that brought most colonists to the English colonies across the Atlantic Ocean from Europe. In mainland Europe, the unholy marriage of church and state between the monarchies and the Catholic Church not only enabled an authoritarian system to rule over the people, but even made dissent a serious crime, because opposition to the government was not only an affront against one king, but also against God, since the king, it was taught, was the ruler based on divine appointment. In England, though, the island nation pursued the barbarian system, barbarian defined as non-Roman, of Saxons along with much of Northern Europe, which not only pursued forming a government where nobody was above the law, including the monarchy, but also the teachings of Protestantism, the marriage of church and state still eventually took place, where it became a crime punishable by penalty if someone refused to be a member of the Church of England and attend government-sanctioned services. The Puritans in New England specifically came to America to flee from the tyranny of government controlling religion, but in line with their former keepers, the Puritans themselves set up a system based on an established religion and all of the political ramifications that goes along with such a system. When the United States Constitution was ratified, the delegates from the convention and those that argued in favor of the new government during the state ratification conventions championed that the federal government was limited by the Constitution, only given the authorities to handle external issues, and that all internal issues remained the responsibility of the churches, of the states, and the local governments. As a result, though, as stated in the First Amendment, the federal government could not pass any law establishing religion, nor prohibit the free exercise of religion. The states were not affected by that amendment by making religion a state issue. In 1800, when Thomas Jefferson was elected president of the United States, a group of Baptists in Connecticut who had been enduring an existence of second-class citizenship under the iron fist of the Puritan church in control of the state wrote to Jefferson to congratulate him on his win. They were hopeful he could help them in their plight, since he and Madison were the key components in establishing religious freedom in the state of Virginia with the Virginia Act for Establishing Religious in 1786. In response to the letter by the Danbury Baptists, Jefferson wrote that he could not help them because there must be a wall of separation between church and state. And that's what Jefferson wrote. Thomas Jefferson was a professed Christian, but not by your typical church-going Christian. Because of his unorthodox style of worship and outside the mainstream activities regarding his faith, among other reasons, he was targeted by many clergy, media figures, and politicians during the presidential election as being non-religious, an atheist, and one that sought to destroy religion in America. Accusations were so convincing that some citizens actually buried their Bibles in their yards in hopes of avoiding their Bibles from being confiscated by Jefferson's new government once the statesman had won the election by a narrow margin in the House of Representatives. Jefferson defended himself about his faith in numerous articles and letters, but even today the accusations continued. In a letter to Mr. Charles Thompson, Jefferson declared, quote, "I am a real Christian, that is to say, a disciple of..." In the letter, Jefferson goes on to criticize the people who use religion to their advantage or in a manner not consistent with the teachings of Christ, because the policies of religion is more important to those people than the faith itself. Jefferson called himself more of a Christian than those strutting around in the guise of organized religion, and indicated that if Jesus Christ were to return to earth and see what those people had made of Christianity, he would not recognize one feature of his own doctrines. More in a few moments.
Whether you're on active duty, a veteran, or just admire American Armed Forces, there's no better place to get the widest variety of militaria than at Highlands Militaria. Highlands Militaria is one of America's premier distributors of Fox tactical gear and outdoor products. Veteran-owned and operated, Highlands Militaria offers new and used uniforms and insignia from World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and today. With an emphasis on airborne and special operations insignia, gear, collectibles, and uniforms. If you need to replace a cherished badge or unit patch, or just want to gear up for your next outdoor adventure, go to Highlands Militaria at stores.ebay.com/Highlands-Militaria, where you'll find the best supply of the military gear you need. Shipping is always free with one-day handling time, and your satisfaction is guaranteed. Highlands Militaria at stores.ebay.com/Highlands-Militaria. And thank you for your service.
Every 20 seconds, another kid drops out of school.
If we do nothing, 3.5 million kids won't receive a diploma over the next 4 years. United Way knows that kids who have a caring adult in their life are more likely to make it. And the difference between a dropout and a graduate could be you. Take the pledge to volunteer now at unitedway.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Foreclosure is hard on every member of the family, but your family is not alone. If you're struggling with your mortgage, there is help. To learn about the government's Making Home Affordable program, visit makinghomeaffordable.gov or call 1-888-995-HOPE to speak to a HUD-approved housing counselor. It's free of charge. Visit makinghomeaffordable.gov or call 1-888-995-HOPE today. Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, NeighborWorks America, and the Ad Council.
Just when you think you've heard everything, those leftists in D.C. pull something else. They're going to keep on doing it until we, the people, run them out of town on the rail. But what about in the meantime? What are you going to do to protect your family, your property, and your sacred rights as an American when the left-wingers try to redistribute food and who knows what else in the name of social justice? Don't wait for the left to turn our world upside down. Get ready now. Make sure you can provide for your family in an emergency by going to the America's best-known warehouse for all your patriotic gear and survival needs. Just go to our website, conservativenationmedia.com, and click on the Patriot Depot banner. You'll find everything from emergency food supplies to the patriotic gear you'll need today and in the future. That's Patriot Depot at conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. And continuing on here, in Jefferson's response to the Danbury Baptists, his meaning of the phrase wall of separation between church and state did not mean what today's conventional wisdom claims. Instead, when you read the entire letter in context, you realize what he was saying was that religion is not an external matter that can be administered by the federal government. It is an internal matter, an issue that exists within the boundaries of the states and therefore must be a state issue. In other words, it was up to the Danbury Baptists to bring about change in their own state of Connecticut. The federal government could not involve itself in that battle whatsoever. All issues must be administered by local government. The theme of the federal government handling external issues while internal issues are reserved for the state is present throughout the language of the United States Constitution and correspondence by men of that era. To allow the federal government the ability to intrude upon local issues, regardless of justifications given or the morality of the issue, was considered very dangerous and an opening to the festering concept of a large, consolidated federal government controlling the states. The states must be allowed to handle the internal issues themselves. To allow the federal government to intrude upon any of those issues, no matter what they are, would be to open the door for the federal government to use that precedent to intrude upon other internal issues, which would ultimately lead to what happened in many failed civilizations of the past, where the central government became a ruling totalitarian system, micromanaging all issues, including local issues, from a faraway bureaucracy that is both detached from the local people and unable to comprehend what is needed in each locality. One-size-fits-all governance. Article 1, Section 9 of the United States Constitution, we find another clue regarding the attitude of the founders toward whether or not the federal government should be allowed to insert itself into local issues, no matter what that issue is. The clause addresses immigration and the Atlantic slave trade. The clause uses a phrase, quote, as any of the states shall think proper to admit, unquote, allowing the states full control over both issues prior to 1808. Upon reaching 1808, based on the clause, the United States Congress was being granted the authority to pass laws prohibiting the import of slaves and any group or persons Congress found necessary to reference to immigration. In the case of slavery, what this did was allow Congress to pass a law outlawing the Atlantic slave trade and reducing the increase of the slave population in the United States to new births of slaves in the country. Critics of the Founding Fathers argue that this evidence that the founders were racist because it shows they wanted slavery to remain legal in the United States. Now, I didn't take it that way, but I know a lot of people who do. If they truly believed that slavery was a sin, as constitutionalists claim, then the framers of the Constitution would have used the document to outright ban slavery. The argument, however, does not take the reality of the time period into consideration. Taken into the context of history, a careful observer will realize that banning slavery in 1787 with the Constitution was impossible if the United States was to have a chance to remain united as the original 13 states. In order to achieve the required minimum 9 ratification votes, founders needed both northern and southern states to be willing to ratify the Constitution. Without compromises regarding slavery, the southern states would never have been willing to join the new union under the federal government. However, most of the signers of the U.S. Constitution were either abolitionists or at least believed that slavery was a sin and must not be allowed to expand any further. However, the principles laid out by the Constitution disallowed the federal government through legislation to ban slavery or influence slavery within the states. Authorities, and for those vested authorities to be powers that dealt with external issues. Internal issues were intended to be handled by the state governments and the local governments. When a federal government begins to involve itself in local issues, the road to tyranny is soon to follow. And we see that happening today, folks. It's this whole thing that we can't survive without a big government protecting us in every way, shape, and form is ridiculous. And following through on this, government has to do things certain ways in order to keep from being a tyranny, makes sense. Knowing this, even for a good and moral cause, the founders did not believe that the federal government should be allowed to force the states to abandon slavery. Once the slaves were within the borders of the states, slavery became a state issue. States, from the point of view of the founders, had to come to the conclusion to ban slavery themselves, individually, without federal interference. However, the federal government could start the ball rolling by banning the part of slavery that was within their authorities, granted, by addressing the external issue of the import of slaves. Therefore, Article 1, Section 9 allowed the United States Congress to end the Atlantic slave trade beginning in 1808. The delay of 20 years was also a compromise. If the Atlantic slave trade was to be eliminated in 1787, then when the Constitution was written, the slave states in the South vowed to reject the new Constitution, thus ensuring that the new government failed to reach ratification. The decision to only allow the federal government to stop the Atlantic slave trade was to protect state sovereignty. The individual citizens, the states are supposed to be sovereign individuals, able to make their own decisions regarding local issues determined to the states. Enabling the central government to force the states to act the way the federal bureaucrats expect them to act is dangerous, unconstitutional, and a surefire path to tyranny. And that's something a lot of people today just have lost sight of. We cannot allow the government to get any bigger. As a matter of fact, it's way too big now. Broken tumbler resource. Yeah. Flycatch in the chat room has been just typing up a storm in there. And he talks about the military just released information pertaining to prospective recruits. What they said was that the new wave of prospects candidates were too fat, that many had too many tattoos and were illiterate. Broken down by race, the worst group was Hispanic, followed by blacks, and coming in last was whites. And it's that kind of goes right along with what I was saying. We have to stop and start thinking about what this country is heading for, because right at the moment we're right on the surefire path to tyranny. We will be right back with more after a few moments here. Our friendly local pilot in command and GOP spokesman Duke Brooks calls himself a paleocon, and rightly so, since it's clear that anti-communism is in his DNA. His parents were friends with Joe McCarthy, Bill Buckley, and Whitaker Chambers, so what would you expect? There's no truth to the rumor that he has a dartboard with Alger Hiss's picture on it, but that would be cool, wouldn't it? But you can get your weekly dosage of old-school conservatism, right-wing politics, American history, and hangar flying on Radio Free America with Duke Brooks, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. You are listening to conservativenationmedia.com with the New Whites Conservatism Radio Show, and I'm Robert Garden, your host. Call-in number is 718-305-7176 if you want to join in the fun. Like Rome, the United States began as a republic, but over time the American system has been monkeyed with, transitioning it from a republic to a democracy, and now we are seeing our system being maneuvered into an oligarchy, with the possibility of it becoming a totalitarian empire run by big government statists on the horizon. This transition was not instant. It happened incrementally, like it did in Rome. And the key in regards to the big picture of it all was changing the atmosphere from the central government handling external issues. And that's the same thing as what happened in Rome. And we all know what happened to Rome. But coming down to that, marriage is yet another part of this equation. The liberal left, progressive Democrats, are working to change marriage from a locally administered issue to an issue not only being administered by the centralized federal government, but to force the states to comply with government's intrusion on the issue, even after the populations of some states have passed state constitutional amendments and laws to define marriage as between a man and a woman. Well, we all had a big issue here in Indiana this week where a federal judge made a ruling that Indiana's ban on same-sex marriage was unconstitutional. That's the government stepping in where it shouldn't be. And we have judges making law or interpreting law from the bench, and that's not what that's not what a judge is supposed to be doing. In other words, this whole onslaught against marriage, forcing states to allow gay marriage despite the vote of the local population, has nothing to do with marriage and everything to time leftist battle to eliminate the state's voice from any law, including local law. It is an attempt to crush state sovereignty and an individuality and the individuality of the states. The Democrats claim their authority is their unconstitutional interpretation of federal supremacy, Article 6. However, states that federal laws are only supreme when they are within the authorities granted by the Constitution in pursuance of. Forcing the states to accept the federal government's definition of marriage on an issue that constitutionally belongs to the states is tyranny. And this is not the first time the Democrats have tried to control marriage either, and sadly, it won't be the last. Even if they get everything that they are after, it still be enough, will it?
The Internet's official Rhino Hunting Safari.
Unexpected reactions to smart financial decisions brought to you by feedthepig.org.
Well, I finally did it. I improved my credit score.
You're kidding, right?
No.
How are we supposed to be the bad boys of electrosynth pop if you're out there being responsible? The band is about to be discovered. This is our year.
Yeah, you've been saying that for a while now.
You think anyone in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame was worried about their credit score?
I never really thought that.
Of course they weren't. Rock stars aren't supposed to think about that kind of stuff. We're supposed to think about how many guitars we've smashed, write aggressively sensitive power ballads, start questionable fashion trends, tragically break up and blame creative differences.
All right, just... I thought maybe it was time to take control of my finances, you know? Start using a budget. Get out of debt. Set some goals.
A budget? Debt? Set some goals? Listen, I knew that we'd have our creative differences, but I was hoping they'd involve a little more scandal.
When it comes to financial stability, don't get left behind. Get tools and tips for saving at feedthepig.org. This message brought to you by the American Institute of CPAs and the Ad Council.
So, I'm a dog, and I just got adopted by this new human guy, and I'm starting to wonder how he got along without me. I mean, okay, something as simple as walking around the block. He's got this leash thing, and he puts me on one end and him on the other, and I'm just taking him around. I think he's afraid of getting lost. Without that leash and me guiding him along, I don't think he'd find his way back home. But it's kind of cute.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
ConservativeNationMedia.com is growing. And we couldn't think of a better way to expand our lineup than to give our very own Bing Fisher his very own show. Uncle Bing Fisher brings his engineer's insight and love of America to American by Design Sunday evenings, that's tomorrow night, at 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 Central, on ConservativeNationMedia.com. So stay with Conservative Nation Media 7 days a week since we're making some big changes and we're just getting started. American by Design with Bing Fisher, Sundays at 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 Central on ConservativeNationMedia.com, where America always wins. You are listening to ConservativeNationMedia.com and the New Wise Conservatism Radio Show, and I'm Robert Garding. Our call-in number is 718-305-7176.
Okay, continuing on this, marriage is a personal decision between a couple, and for them to share the joy of the occasion with family and friends. But regulation or licensing by outside agencies, be they religious or governmental, can be problematic and normally only emerges when an atmosphere of control is present. Well, yeah, we see that today, don't we? During the founding of this nation, marriage was an issue that existed between the couples and their families, and sometimes in the realm of the church. There was no central government marriage licenses, though some localities had churches issue licenses or licenses issued by local government. Licenses, when issued, were often an attempt to control the problem of marriages outside of family approval. During that time period, when a license was issued, it was under the auspice of government deciding who was fit to marry based on family definitions or cultural definitions. Marriage licenses expanded and became a large government function after the American Civil War, when Democrats in the South pushed marriage license laws in order to control marriage and disallow blacks and whites from entering into matrimony together. Marriage licenses reemerged in the 1930s, but this time the federal government unconstitutionally grabbed hold of the issue. With the creation of the government programs through the New Deal, marriage became a legal issue, allegedly requiring fusion of entitlements in the case of divorce or death. The intrusion of the government into the issue of marriage has historically been for the purpose of controlling marriage so that marriage and divorce follow the mandates put into place by government bureaucrats. However, now the control of marriage has reached new heights because what is happening is that state after state is passing state constitution amendments or pieces of legislation defining marriage as between a man and a woman. And the federal courts are striking these amendments and laws down unconstitutionally, just like they did here in Indiana. Every time a state passes something stating the definition of marriage is between a man and a woman, the courts swoop in under the guise of equality and use the unconstitutional concept of judicial review to negate the state's decision on a state issue. The gay lobby, in other words, is using the federal government to force the states into federal compliance. Well, they did that here in Indiana, like I said the other day, and already the state has put a halt to it and stopped it. Still going to be a battle. It's, you know, once they allow this kind of thing, it's going to be a battle to get rid of it. It's just like Obamacare. Once that thing became law, it's going to be harder to get rid of it, even though we all know it needs to be gotten rid of. But personally, I don't believe any government agency, local or federal, should be involved in marriage, though I find our culture being herded to accept as normal the concept of marriage other than between a man and a woman. I also recognize that the issue must be guided by cultural norms, not by governmental dictate. From the strictest constitutional guidelines, the issue belongs to the state. From a Christian point of view, the issue belongs to the church. From a reasonable point of view, the issue belongs to the couple. In all scenarios, the federal government has no business being involved in this issue at all. If the issue of marriage should truly be up to the couple and the organizations performing the marriage, then the government's role is not to control marriage, but to annotate the event for record purposes, and that is all. The churches or other institutions offering marriage should then be allowed to make their own decisions on what kind of marriages they are willing to perform, such as one should see in a free market, where the decisions of the institutions will influence the consequences or benefits of their decision, and success or failure as an institution will be influenced by those decisions. For the progressive left, the goal is not marriage equity, but to consolidate more power in the federal government, violating the concept of state sovereignty and creating another precedent. And you keep hearing this word, precedent. That's exactly what the government is after here. They want to set a precedent so that they can say, well, see, this has happened before, and that's what I'm going on to say here in creating another precedent, allowing the federal government to dictate to the states, to force the states to act in a manner in line with what the federal government demands. And let me make this clear here. The government uses these precedents to say it has been done before, it can be done again. Control is all they are after. A large part of what has made our nation prosperous, innovative, and the home of the free is the individual-centric nature of our system that recognizes the citizens as being individuals that ought to be self-reliant, personally responsible, and make voluntary choices. As part of that equation is the states themselves as well. The states are individual, autonomous, sovereign entities that are voluntary members of the union and the creators of the federal government. The federal government was established to serve the states and handle external issues while leaving internal issues alone. The federal government was not created to control the states or force the states into compliance of some federal mandate. And that's just all there is to it. The federal courts continuously striking down state amendments and state laws on the state issue of marriage is opening up a Pandora's box aimed at getting a flood of unconstitutional actions by the federal government specifically designed to destroy the voice of the states. And we have to remember this here, folks. That is exactly what they're trying to do, to silence the voice of the states and to eliminate the states from the equation so that the federal government becomes the ruling part of government, even over local issues. This is Obama's plan, too, and be all, serve all, rule over all government, and it'll never work. When Rome's central government took away local control over local issues, that was among the nails in the coffin for that civilization, when the local issues began to be controlled by a faraway consolidated government that knew nothing of the local reasons for certain laws based on culture or moral proclivity, collapse was inevitable. In the end, the liberal left use of courts to force the states into compliance isn't about fairness or equity, and has everything to do with the elimination of the individuality of the states. Progressives did it with the 17th Amendment in 1913, and they are working to complete killing the voice of the states through the courts on local issues now. We have to be aware of what the federal government is doing and why they are doing it and why they must be stopped at all costs for the sake of America's future and for our children's future. And that, for the last little bit, which I added in there, came from Political Pistachio, from my friend Douglas V. Gibbs, and he's in California. So he's one of these rare breeds out there that, you know, he's a conservative, and you don't see many of those out there, although I think there's more now than there used to be. But I'm proud to call him a friend of mine, and I asked him if I could use that in my show, and he said, go for it. So I did. And it used most of my hour, which is cool. But it had a lot of information in there that needs to be known. This whole thing about gay marriage is not about quality to one people over another or making everybody equal when it comes to marriage. All it is just control over the states, taking control of something that the federal government has no right constitutionally to take over. And it's being allowed. And that's one of the reasons why this country is in so much trouble right now, because the things that the federal government is doing goes completely against all logic when it comes to needing to stay the way it was formed in the first place. And we are so far from that now that it's going to take a lot to get it back. We will be right back with the second hour of the New Wise Conservatives radio show, excuse me, here on the conservativenationmedia.com. Please stay tuned.
If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org. A single ember from a wildfire can travel over a mile. It can ignite and destroy your home and even your community. To that ember, all those branches hanging over your roof might as well be giant matchsticks ready to spark. The pile of dry leaves and twigs clogging your gutters are the perfect kindling to start a fire. And all those debris piles and brush around your yard, which you haven't taken care of yet, are pure lighter fluid, ready to ignite. There are some fire hazards that aren't clearly marked, and they can impact you and your neighbors. Learn to spot them, because your home is better protected from wildfire damage when your whole community is prepared. Visit fireadapted.org for more tips on how to get started adapting your home and community to wildfires. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Wow, yeah, since the storm, it's been crazy busy for us. We got all kinds of office desks coming in. Now, here's a fancy one right here. It's missing a leg, but that's all right. Whatever. Washers and dryers from a laundromat. Oh, wow, and check this out. Another deep fryer. And I'm not sure what this doohickey is. Yeah, most businesses weren't ready for a storm like that, you know. But our work's really piling up here at Roberts & Son Salvage.
What will become of your business after a disaster? Nearly two-thirds of businesses aren't prepared for an emergency. And 40% of businesses that experience a disaster never recover. Make an emergency plan now, before it's too late. For a free online tool that helps you develop an emergency plan to keep your business up and running should disaster strike, visit ready.gov/business. Brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency, the American Red Cross, and the Ad Council.
From West Central Indiana, one of the few states that runs its budget in the black, comes the New Wise Conservatism Radio Show. I'm Kathy Henners of Daily Roll Call to let you know that traditional Americans are still considered traitors to the Obama nation, and we are proud of our constitutional conservatism. Obama can't touch this. You're listening to Hour 2 of the show, and we are being broadcast to you through ConservativeNationMedia.com. And now, the voice of reason in this unreasonable world, Robert Garding.
Well, at least that one worked. First one that I had for my first hour, it didn't work, and I was sitting there listening for it, and it never played. Welcome back to the second hour of the show today, and you know I've been completely amazed at the ease with which I come across these articles and stories to report to you every week since Obama's second term, especially where it was not so easy for over the first 5 or so years that I did this show. Oh, sure, I got stories and the things to talk about, but I noticed when I started doing my show through Conservative Nation Media that I had to do my show for 2 hours, something I had never done before. It started, and I started it not really sure how I was going to fill 2 hours with stuff to talk about, but the way this country is going now, folks, it seems that 2 hours just isn't enough time. I could easily fill a four-hour show with no trouble at all with what's going on now, and that's how much the Democrats and Obama and the hierarchy of the Republican Party are giving us to talk about weekly. And to top off that, I could probably do a show of 4 hours nightly and still have a lot to talk about. But here's the sad part. A lot of what I am finding isn't just coming from the liberal left or the media. A lot of it is also coming from the Republicans who are just, we're supposed to be there to serve people, but it seems when they come up against something they know the people will go for, they cave every time to the Democrats when the leftists will them to. The only ones that don't are the newcomers like Ted Cruz, who I talked about a lot on this show, Mike Lee, another one that shows he has a backbone, and a few others who will stand up and fight in the things that we conservatives believe in. We know that the way this country is being led, that it won't last much longer, and they like me, do not like the direction this country is going, and they say something about it. The difference between them and me is they have a bigger audience, and they get called terrorists for their love of America. I haven't had that one yet, but I figure someday it will happen, because that is how the liberals think when it comes to America. Anyone who loves this country and wants to save her is a terrorist or an extremist. And to me, that's a sad state of affairs. Welcome to the second hour of the New Wise Conservatism Radio Show on this 28th of June. It's almost over already in the year of our Lord 2014. On Thursday's broadcast of Fox News Channel's Hannity, State Senator Chris McDaniel, the Republican candidate in last Tuesday's GOP primary that fell just shy of defeating longtime incumbent Senator Thad Cochran, reacted to the outcome. McDaniel laid out his Republican credentials and questioned why some within his state's Republican Party had gone to such lengths for Cochran. "It was shocking," McDaniel said. "I'm a two-term state senator. I've been a Republican since I was 13 years old. I've paid my dues. I've gone door-to-door. I've given money. I considered these men and women to be my friends and colleagues. Desperation and quest for power pushed them somewhat over the edge." And Tuesday evening, the Republican primary in Mississippi was not decided by Republican voters. It was decided by 35,000 to 40,000 Democrats. That's unprecedented and extraordinarily unusual. He also claimed that he had evidence of more than 1,000 voting irregularities in just one county and pointed to desperate tactics Cochran employed to get Democrats out to vote for him. "It's not so much a recount," McDaniel continued. "We're looking to the issue of whether or not people who participated in the June 3rd Democrat primary crossed over into the Republican primary this Tuesday night. We found more than 1,000 examples of that in one county alone. So we've found widespread irregularities of ineligible voters. They should not have been there in the first place, and they were pushed there. This is what's shocking. They were action, an aggressive action on the part of Senator Cochran's campaign that was filled with race baiting, lies, and distortions. He literally ran the latter 3 weeks on food stamps. He ran on voter suppression and ran on pork. The Mississippi is a conservative state, and one would think that our party was a conservative party. This proves otherwise." And that's what he said on Hannity. But as far as the tactics themselves, McDaniel condemned them and said that that was just his justification for pursuing further action questioning the outcome. He continued and said, "It's absolutely despicable," he added. "They did everything in their power to embrace liberal Democrats, but think about that for a second. If we have an agenda to conserve conservatives, which is to fight with principle, to be strong upon open, courageous, and they say they're going to fight the liberals in Washington, but they embrace the liberals in Mississippi just to win the election, it's the worst style of politicking I can imagine. They did it. They've gotten away with it so far, and that's why they're looking to at voter irregularities." McDaniel went on to add that he did not know if he would support Cochran in the November election if it continues on that Cochran won that election. But it's something that we're just going to have to watch and see, I guess. It's something that I never heard about before, but I'm hearing about quite a bit lately, it seems like. And the more I hear about it, the faster the next one comes, it seems. America is still the freest country on earth, and those of us who love America know that the Constitution is the reason for our liberties. ConservativeNationMedia.com isn't going to let those leftists from D.C. take our freedom away. And our constitutional expert, Matthew Opalisky, is leading the charge. Join Matthew every Thursday night at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, for the Liberty and Constitution community to learn about our rights and freedoms under the greatest governing document of all time and what you can do to protect your liberty under the Bill of Rights. The Liberty and Constitution community with Matthew Opalisky, Thursdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central Time on ConservativeNationMedia.com, where America always wins. During Barack Obama's 2014 State of the Union, the president announced he will sign an executive order, we got another one coming, raising the minimum wage $10.10 an hour. He believes this will stimulate the economy, benefit the lower class, and further level the playing field for the American people. The more this man opens his mouth, the more I think of him as a complete moron. First of all, the use of executive orders violates the separation of powers, which was set by this country's founding fathers in the Constitution. Mr. Obama is throwing out Article 1, Section 1 of the Constitution. All legislative powers herein granted shall be vested in a Congress of the United States, which shall consist of a Senate and a House of Representatives. If the president cannot pass his agenda through this country's democratic process, it respectfully should not become law. Secondly, the president has indicated he will force the wage increase on federal workers. Where does he suppose this money will come from? This money is coming straight out of the taxpayer's pocket, while the 2014 budget already calls for a $380 billion deficit and the project and the projected year-end trillion for $56,000 per U.S. citizen. I didn't even pay that much for my house, folks. As for his executive order, why stop at $10.10 an hour? Why not raise the minimum wage to $20 or $100 an hour? If everyone made $100,000 per year, wouldn't poverty be eliminated and everyone in America lives happily ever after? Unfortunately, Mr. Obama and his staff failed to research the potential devastating consequences of such a radical and unwarranted order. It is currently estimated 50 to 60% of the people that live below the poverty line currently don't work, and raising the minimum wage will only make it harder for those citizens actually looking to enter the labor force. If businesses are mandated to pay higher wages, they simply will be more selective on whom they hire. Similar to any other goods or services, if you raise the price of it, the people will take less. Employers are left with two options, cutting employees or seeking other ways to use less labor. Either one is devastating to our economy. You raise wages, the price of everything else is going to go up too, so everybody's going to be in exactly the same situation they were before. In a true capitalistic society, and what this country was founded on, the market can and should set the minimum wage, just like all other commodities. True, the source of higher earnings is personal responsibility. U.S. citizens need to hold themselves accountable for their earnings and make themselves more marketable to employers by furthering their education and accumulating additional experience and skills in the workforce. Mr. Obama cannot force higher wages on taxpayers and expect everything else to work itself out. That story was from FixThisNation.com, so what do you think? We will be right back, and I'm running a little bit ahead of time, but that's okay.
Aren't you glad the so-called fairness doctrine doesn't apply here?
So glad we left that stupid party.
No joke.
Hey, baby, are you an overdue library book? Because you got fine written all over you.
Ugh, barf. What about that girl with a hoop earring?
Ridiculous. When she was dancing...
Megan, look out! Look out!
Oh, my God. Becky. Becky, are you okay? My arm. I think it's broken. Can you bend it? It's already bent. In the wrong direction. I can't believe this. I'm so sorry. I only had a few drinks. I was just buzzed.
Really? Just buzzed?
Yeah, I swear.
Well, in that case, my arm is fine. Ah, that's better.
You're really okay? You're serious, Becky?
No, genius. I'm not serious.
My arm, it hurts.
Buzzed driving. Maybe we should stop acting like it's no big deal. Buzzed driving is drunk driving. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, the Ad Council, and this station.
Okay, so 5 tacos of cheese and a large soda, that's $10,012. Please drive around.
Wait, 10,000 what?
It's obvious you're buzzed and driving.
I've only had a few. I'm fine.
Yeah, the food's $12, but getting pulled over for buzzed driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Please drive around. Actually, just park and come in.
Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzzed driving, because buzzed driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Dave Vance inviting you to join me every Monday night for Inside Tennessee on ConservativeNationMedia.com. Even if you're not from the volunteer state, you'll want to know what's happening because one day it will affect you. Every week you'll hear interviews with experts, legislators, and citizens who are fed up and making a stand. So join us every Monday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central Time, for Inside Tennessee on ConservativeNationMedia.com.
Buddy, you're a boy, make a big noise, playing in the street, gonna be a big man someday, you got mud on your face, you big
dude. From the Washington Times, written by Bridget Gabriel, comes this one about ISIS, you know, the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria. We tend to think that they are only a problem there, but that is not true. Like all jihadists and Islamists, they want to take over the world. Let them go, and they will be here. Mark my words, folks. There is a great deal of confusion and ignorance about the jihadist organization ISIS, which has been waging a terror campaign in those two nations for some time, now culminating in most recently in the seizure of Iraq's second largest city, Mosul, M-O-S-U-L. ISIS isn't acting out of anger or over borders or politics, as the West understands the terms. ISIS is a specific goal, has a specific goal in mind, and that is the formation of an Islamic state ruled by Sharia. This is very important to understand because this is a common goal of all major jihadist organizations across the world. It is shared by Al-Qaeda, Hamas, Lashkar-e-Taiba, Abu Shayef, Jemaah Islamiyah, Boko Haram, Al-Shabaab, and others. The shared goal transcends any disagreements over borders and pure politics. For instance, Israel could evaporate tomorrow, and the overriding goal of the formation of Islamic states ruled by Sharia would not change one bit. It's based on their thousand-year-old doctrine, which is far more fundamental and overreaching than mere political ideology. If we ever hope to win this war against radical Islam, we better understand that the goal of establishing an Islamic state ruled by Sharia is based on doctrine and not just ideology. Islamic doctrine is not derived from the thoughts or ideological vision of a man or woman brought to the fore in recent years. Islamic doctrine is based on the Islamic trilogy, the Quran, the Hadith, and the Sira, S-I-R-A. The Quran is the central religious text of Islam, believed by Muslims to be a direct revelation from Allah. The Hadith is a series of traditions documenting the teachings, deeds, and sayings of the Prophet Muhammad. And the Sira is the biography of Muhammad, considered to have been the perfect man who set an example for all Muslims to follow always. In order for an individual to be a good Muslim, it is not enough for him to worship Allah. He must worship Allah in the same way that Muhammad did. The name given to Islamic doctrine is Sharia. Not only does Sharia form the basis of the doctrine to which the jihadists, such as those of ISIS, adhere, it is also the common goal of jihadists to espy Sharia in an Islamic state. All other considerations, economic, political, and military, take a backseat to adhering to and establishing Sharia. It is this doctrinal basis that is the key to understanding the threat from jihad. Too often the West becomes tied up in contemporary considerations and issues that have nothing to do with doctrine and assign too much significance to them. Islamic doctrine, Sharia, transcends geography, politics, and even different Islamic sects. It is the common thread that ties Boko Haram and Nigeria to ISIS and Iraq and Abu Sayyaf to Philippines to Lashkar-e-Taiba to Kashmir. It is jihad is not a local phenomenon. When a variety of terrorist groups all wage violence for the same reason with the same goals, this should be considered a clue that there is something more at work here than just local conflicts. Make no mistake, ISIS does not just pose a threat to Iraq. History has shown that when an Islamic state ruled by Sharia is established, such as Taliban, Afghanistan, that state becomes a launching pad for jihad elsewhere. Already we have seen reports that American jihadists have joined ISIS to fight alongside jihadists from around the world. But the conflict in Iraq is portrayed in the Western media as a civil war. The truth is that most of the ISIS fighters are not Iraqi. They are jihadi warriors from around the world, including from the West. What happens when these jihadists head home? Will they leave the war behind in Iraq and Syria, or will they bring jihad home? In warfare, your enemy's reality becomes your reality, and you must go to great lengths to understand your enemy. Unfortunately, we have largely failed on that score as a nation. Our elected and appointed officials must come to terms with a doctrinal basis for jihad so we can properly and effectively defend America, protect American lives, and face our enemies. And the enemies are always going to be there as long as we don't understand them. Be there even if we understand them. But if we understand them, then we have a chance at fighting them. We continue to go on this ideal that we think is the cause of everything going on over there, and we're wrong, we'll never be able to fight them to a standstill. In other words, they will fight us to a standstill, and then they will take over. It's what they want to do, that is their goal. And as long as we don't realize that, we're on the losing end. And this whole thing about our borders down in the South being open, don't you think they know this? I used to live down there. There was a lot of people coming across those borders that shouldn't have been coming across. Tells us they can't figure out who all has come across, who all is here, why they are here. So how can they tell us with any certainty that jihadists are not here? They're here. They're in almost every city, the major city in the United States. They're here. A lot of them are here waiting for the order to start an attack somewhere. And as long as the government of the United States feels that we are safe because we are a sovereign nation and we have borders, whether they're open or not, doesn't matter. We will get caught with our pants down. And then the ones of us who have been talking about this all along, like Kathy Henners, if you ever listen to her, that woman is amazing. She knows things that about the Muslim Brotherhood and what's going on here in the United States that I would have never thought about knowing until I met her. Now I'm starting to research it, and it scares me to death. This nation keeps following down the road to the yellow brick road like there's nothing going to happen to us. We're too big to fail. No, we're not thinking that way, and we're going to get caught so badly, and the only thing that will help us is our military. Because we still have the best military in the world and the best fighters in the world. But we're going to take a beating. We have to realize what is going on. Because if we don't, this nation will have its problems in the coming years, I'm afraid. And, you know, that's something that I hate saying. But I look at this. I look at what's going on. I watch what's going on. I see how many people are coming through our borders. I know that some of them have to be Islamic. And our government is just turning a blind eye. They don't care. He wants them here, from everything I've been able to figure out with him. And as long as he wants them here, you've got to know that they're coming. And Cog in the chat room said, in a few years, our military is going to be mostly illegal aliens. And the problem with that is that we're going to have a military that's not going to be able to fight its way out of a plastic bag that's been ripped open anyway. And then it will be too late. And there was a report that I found this week about a Mexican gunship helicopter flew over our border and fired on our border agents. And then the government of Mexico apologized for it, and it's all right now. Yeah, right. It's not all right because this kind of thing is going to continue as long as we allow it to continue, and we're allowing it to continue. And this whole thing, you know, I keep thinking, I'd love to go back to the Southwest and live down there. I loved it there. But I won't go there anymore because it's... That's the stepping off point. That's where everybody is coming in because the borders are open. And you've got to know, just like I said before, you've got to know the terrorists know that border's open. You've got to know all of our enemies know that border's open. They know how easy it is to get into this country. And Flycat said it happened yesterday. And with it happening yesterday, how many of the mainstream media caught that and ran front page articles about it? I got the Indianapolis Star yesterday. I didn't see anything in it. It's almost like our media is saying, well, if we don't report it, it's not happening. You don't have to worry about a damn thing. And I used to be one of these people who, if I didn't see something in the media, it didn't happen. I was conservative, yeah. But I didn't go to the extremes of watching what's going on and looking around and seeing what is happening here in this nation. I just read the newspapers. I just listened to the news on the TV. If I didn't hear it from them, it wasn't happening. Boy, were my eyes opened. We will be right back after these important messages. One of the worst nightmares that can befall an American today is identity theft. If it happens to you, it may take months or even longer to recover from it, if you can recover at all. Don't let it happen to you. Protect yourself in advance and sign up today with LifeLock. LifeLock is a lot more than just your credit monitoring service. LifeLock helps to protect your personal information using a combination of data surveillance techniques and outstanding member service 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and 365 days a year. There's really nothing that comes close to LifeLock. Protect your identity with LifeLock and get 10% off their great service. Go to conservativenationmedia.com and click on the LifeLock banner. Network may not cover all transactions and the scope may vary. That's conservativenationmedia.com and then click on the LifeLock banner. You will be very glad that you did.
What does it take to be the leader in production systems technology? To be the one company that solves production problems at any plant, for any product, and with any technology? It takes a 30-year record of success. It takes total mastery of complex technologies with a history of delivering success every time, without fail. Only one company can claim that high ground in manufacturing line optimization, data automation, and systems integration, and that's Philadelphia Control Systems. In factories worldwide, Philadelphia Control Systems programs, software, and engineering solutions deliver optimal performance and output flow with a record that can't be matched. Any plant, any product, any technology. Philadelphia Control Systems, the leader in production automation since 1982. 800-335-9811. PCS4automation.com. That's PCS, the number 4, automation.com.
Tacos of cheese and a large soda, that's $10,012. Please drive around.
Wait, 10,000 what?
It's obvious you're buzzed and driving.
I've only had a few. I'm fine.
Yeah, the food's $12, but getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Please drive around. Actually, just park and come in.
Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
This is a guided meditation on parenting. Find a relaxed position to let go of the time you left your daughter's blouse in the dryer too long and it shrunk 4 sizes, or when you donated her private diary to the public library. Deep breaths.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
ConservativeNationMedia.com. You're listening to the New White Conservatism Radio Show, and I'm Robert Darding. Our call-in number is 718-305-7176. In a series of three radically charged, racially charged radio ads that ran in rural Mississippi on Election Day played a role in driving black Democrats to vote in a Republican primary runoff election. Mail Online has exclusively obtained audio and of the ads, and I was reading that article, listened to those audio, and I was going to put them on the show, and then I decided, I didn't really have the time for that because they were, some of them were lengthy, but it said they were broadcast 48 times in a 12-hour period Tuesday on WMGO AM radio in the town of Canton. and urged black Mississippians to cross party lines and support GOP Senator Thad Cochran in his smash mouth contest against Tea Party insurgent Chris McDaniel. Each carried a required acknowledgement stating that it was paid for by Citizens for Progress. Clerks at the Office of Mississippi's Secretary of State told Mail Online that no such group is registered there as a political committee. The Federal Election Commission also lacks any registration from a group with that name. Politics in America's Deep South is historically a full contact sport replete with its own tradition of dirty tricks. But the radio ads indicate a level of race baiting that is rarely seen in the 21st century U.S. politics, at least it wasn't until recently. They claim that supporters of conservative McDaniel had connections to the Ku Klux Klan and that McDaniel had a racist agenda. They also warned that black Democrats could lose food stamps, housing assistance, student loans, early breakfast and lunch programs, disaster assistance if he were to become the Republican U.S. Senate nominee. Vote against the Tea Party. Vote Thad Cochran, one ad said. If the Tea Party with their racist ideas win, we will be sent back to the 50s and 60s. Mail Online has learned that Citizens for Progress is tied to a longtime Democratic political operative who was paid $44,000 to run racially explosive robocalls in the same race. A political action committee founded by former Republican National Committee Chair and former Republican Governor Haley Barbour made those payments. The calls were placed in predominantly black and Democratic regions the final days before Tuesday's runoff, according to a political operative in Mississippi. Mitzi Blickers, or Bickers, an Atlanta pastor and former president of the Atlanta School Board, used the same non-existent group name, Citizens for Progress, in a 2013 campaign for local sales tax proposal. After it was reported that Bickers filed a fraudulent financial disclosure report related to the campaign, she resigned her post as a senior advisor to Atlanta Mayor Kasem Reed. The political super PAC that paid her to run the robocalls is called Mississippi Conservatives, according to National Review. Haley Barbour, the former governor, founded the PAC, which is now run by Henry Barbour, his nephew. Henry Barbour denied any knowledge of the three radio ads, but acknowledged to Mail Online that his organization had paid Bickers for the phone call campaign. We hired Mitzi Bickers to do paid phone calls, he said Friday via email. If she had something to do with radio ads, I am unaware of it and not involved with radio ads in Canton. Of course not. That seems to be the deal that a lot of these politicians are running on now. I didn't know. They should know. It's time to take a stand and say no to the Tea Party, the call scripts read. No to their obstruction. No to the disrespectful treatment of the first African-American president. Bickers did not respond to repeated phone calls seeking comment. One of the radio ads that first surfaced online by opposition researcher Charles C. Johnson, a McDaniel supporter, said Tea Party advocate whose Twitter feed is a one-stop shop for conservatives who claim widespread voter fraud delivered Cochran a victory from the jaws of defeat. Johnson also first obtained the recording of the robocalls, in which some of the same language as the radio ads, including the claim that Chris McDaniels would cut funding for federal programs favored by Democrats in predominantly black regions of Mississippi. Cochran, a six-term senator, appeared to beat McDaniel 600 votes out of more than 37,000 ballots cast. Two were locked in a runoff following a June 3rd primary contest in which McDaniel led by 1,400 votes, but neither man won 50%. About 61,000 more people voted in the runoff than in the original primary contest, marking the first time in 30 years that a rematch created more interest than the contest that followed. Most of that increase was seen in pockets of the deep red state that are dominated by heavily black Democratic constituencies. The groundswell of voter participation is largely due to a get-out-the-vote strategy that saw tens of thousands of registered Democrats crossing party lines to cast ballots for the Republican Cochran, mostly to protest votes aimed at knocking his Tea Party opponent out of the race. The tactic is legal in Mississippi as long as those protest voters didn't already cast ballots in the Democratic primary 3 weeks earlier. Rolls in Washington, but they embraced the liberals in Mississippi just to win the election, Daniel told Fox News host Sean Hannity on Thursday night. It's the worst style of politicking I can imagine. McDaniel's campaign hasn't conceded Tuesday's election. They may have now, but when I got this article, they hadn't. The political observers expect him to officially challenge the results on Friday or Monday, so maybe not. His supporters have flooded across the state to pore over polling place records, identifying Cochran voters who double-dipped by casting both ballots for a Democrat on June 3rd and for Cochran on June 24th. Facebook pages and Twitter feeds serving as informal clearinghouses for angry Tea Partiers now feature claims that between 5,000 and 15,000 such voters were identified in the first 48 hours after the polls closed Tuesday evening. If true, the result could be thrown out in a special election called in July, the third contest pitting the two Republicans against each other in barely a month. Let's hope that this happens. If there was wrongdoing here, the Republicans have got to start standing up for what is right instead of always backing down. Backing down, look what you beat every time. The stars at night are big and bright deep in the heart of Texas, and conservativenationmedia.com has our very own big and bright Texas star, Michael Berryman. We welcome Michael and his patriotic, no-nonsense brand of Americanism to Sunday afternoons. Michael is as involved in Texas GOP and Tea Party politics as anyone can get. So you won't want to miss his take on Lone Star State conservative goings-on, direct to you from Fort Worth. It's the Michael Berryman Show, and that's tomorrow, Sundays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Central on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. An Ohio man says he lost his job and was arrested all because his young son wanted to go out and play rather than go to church. Worse, Jeffrey Williamson says he faces up to 6 months on a ridiculous charge. Williamson said that his children, including 8-year-old Justin, were outside Blanchester, Ohio home when their Woodville Baptist Church van pulled up, according to WCPO. "Hey, Dad, the church van's here," the kid said, according to Williamson. "We're leaving. We're going on to church." The kid got on the bus, except for Justin, who, unbeknownst to Williamson, had other plans. The boy ended up at a Family Dollar store half a mile away from his home. "He just wanted to go and play in the neighborhood," Williamson said, told WCPO. Police were called to the store. When they asked Justin where he lived, he said he did not know. But an employee at the store told authorities where he lived. Williamson denied that his son did not know his own address. "That's definitely totally untrue," he said, according to WCPO. "He knows his way around this whole neighborhood right here." When the police showed up to Williamson's house with his son, he told him that Justin plays outside all the time with other kids in the neighborhood. "There's a million kids around here that play. I know the parents. The parents know me," he said. Williamson's other children were being dropped off from church when the police took the next step. "The next thing you know, he comes up to me and he says, 'You're under arrest,'" Williamson said, adding that his kids started crying during the scene. The officer was still at Williamson's house when the church van dropped off the other Williamson children. "It's ridiculous to me that I was arrested for this," Williamson said. Being cast as a negligent parent had other negative effects. According to WCPO, Williamson lost his job at McDonald's after the story of the incident was published on the front page of the newspaper. Williamson said he has another job, but he is scheduled to appear in county court on July 15th. Justin was grounded following the incident, according to WCPO. I don't know. This whole thing is just getting really ridiculous, I think.
If you love America, you're among friends here.
As a young teenage boy, I didn't even know what autism was. How do you even spell that? A few years later, I heard that a friend's cousin's son had been diagnosed with autism.
I still wasn't sure what that really meant.
When I went to college, my roommate's brother had autism. When I moved to the city for work, my best friend called me and told me his son had been diagnosed with autism. We were both in shock. I still remember the day I walked into the house and saw that look on my wife's face. I knew something was wrong. I'll never forget how I felt when she said, "Our son has autism."
Autism is getting closer to home. Today, 1 in 88 children is diagnosed with autism. That's a 1,000% increase in the last 40 years. Learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Hey, sweetie, what's going on?
Well, honey, I have some news.
Okay, what?
All that training paid off. I got the job.
Oh, I knew you would get it. So when do you start?
When you donate stuff to Goodwill, you help provide job training for people right here in your community. Goodwill. Donate stuff. Create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
Molon LeVay Challenge Coins and Wares. Similar to challenge coins used by various military units, these MLCCW coins are ideal for anyone that champions the right to keep and bear arms by highlighting the Second Amendment and the Greek phrase Molon LeVay, which translated means come and take them. Come check out our pro-freedom, pro-liberty, and pro-Second Amendment coins and shirts at MLCCW.com. That's MLCCW.com.
ConservativeNationMedia.com. You're listening to the New Weiss Conservatism Radio Show, and I'm Robert Garding. Our call-in number is 718-305-7176. And finally, we here at the New Weiss Conservatism Radio Show want to leave you with our weekly thought of the day. It seems that no matter how much comes out of the corruption and ideals in Washington, D.C., are going against the people and the way that this nation was founded, we just keep voting for the same people that have caused this. Barack Obama came from out of nowhere to take the presidency, and after his first term, when everyone was up in arms about his Obamacare being passed over the objections of about 75% of the people and his complete disregard for our Constitution, we couldn't remember that it was Obama himself who told us before he was elected what he was going to do as president. Then we went back to the ballot boxes in the next election and reelected him, knowing full well that we were giving him his mandate to continue the things he was doing, to continue his destruction of America, and now we are complaining about his actions? People, we were stupid enough to reelect him after he told us what he had in mind to do, and yet we are surprised at what he has done. I guarantee you, folks, he has just begun with what he wants to do with this country and you and I. I want you to listen to this here. He may be planning to run a third term, even though he can't. And this has come up so many times now that I just have to think about this as being something that he's really trying to do and he wants to do. Are we going to be moronic enough to elect him to that, even though the law says of the land says he can't? It seems to me that the ones who want to help this country do not hold the interests of the people these days, and the ones that want to destroy the Constitution and this country's future are the ones that get elected and the ones who get listened to. I'll tell you, this is one patriotic American who is tired of the people voting in, of the people voting into office, the ones who will keep the status quo going. Mark my words here, the status in Washington, D.C. is not good for this nation or her future. and when our own party works against us to keep good people like Chris McDaniel from being elected and to help the fat Cochrans of this nation's politics get reelected, then we should know that that is a sign to get rid of not the party, but the ones running it into the ground, the establishment, so to speak. For years, I've been hearing the media trumpeting stories with headlines that tout, "Is this the end of the Republican Party?" We always say no, but eventually the ones in charge of the GOP are going to succeed in making it so that the Republicans cease to exist. Or it will be there. Don't worry, but the time is coming when we won't exist in office because we will not be able to get elected. We are almost to that point now. Now I know there are those out there that say that would be a good thing. Maybe in the fact that the GOP doesn't seem to have the balls to stand up and do the right things anymore, yeah. But what really needs to be done here, folks, is not the demise of the Republican Party, but a complete shakeup of the Republican Party where the old guard who are working to keep the status quo going get replaced with new blood and new ideas that bring back the Constitution, that's the founding document that it was meant to be, and then work, as Reagan did, to bring back the GOP to the conservative values it was meant to have. We already have some in there doing that, Ted Cruz, Mike Lee, to name a few. I have had a few comments that I've noticed in the chat room and elsewhere that all I do is read from news reports and stuff like this. And yes, I do that a lot, but if you really listen to this, I put my own thoughts into this all the time and give my ideas and thoughts on what is wrong with the way this country is being led and the direction we are going. I think the content should trump where I get it from. Benjamin Franklin once told a woman who asked him what we had been given after the delegation for the Constitution was over when he said, "Ma'am, we have a republic for as long as we can keep it." With all the crap that has come out of Washington these past few years about how our politicians are brazen in their ideas now of how people don't know what they are doing and they need said politicians to keep this country going the direction it should be, we are nuts to keep them in office. And sadly, most of the ideas coming out of government today from both sides of the aisle are destructive to our Constitution and our way of life. When are we going to finally stand up and say, "I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore"? I must say, my friends, I reached that point years ago when the Republicans decided the person to run against Barack Obama was John McCain, not because he could win, because he couldn't, was needed for this country, because he doesn't, but because, now you have to remember this one, because it was his turn. When are we going to realize that the establishment of both political parties does not care what the people want? They do not care what they do with that, if what they do is good for this nation or not. They want what they say is good for the U.S. and no one else, because it is their turn for working for the government for so long. Oh, brother, Barack Obama's Obamacare was not put in play because it would help people. That is where a lot of people have it wrong. It was put there as a legacy that could be linked to his name for as long as it was part of the equation and to make sure that he had all the power. And we keep allowing it to stay a part of the equation by not electing enough of the right people to say, "This is enough. Repeal this monstrosity. Repeal this thing that is not constitutional in the first place and bring back the way it was." We keep electing career politicians who want to keep it going to the demise of this nation because we cannot afford it. We keep electing politicians who say that reform must be done when what really must be done is to bring the Constitution back as law of the land. The same goes for all other establishment politicians we have in this nation. Why do we keep electing the same ones to office? I keep saying it time and time again, to clean house. And I really do not mean our homes. I mean our country's capitals. It is time we took America's future seriously and started to research into just what is needed to save her. Because the Democrats keep telling us that the Republicans are waging a war on children and women, etc. when if the truth was known, doing that. And history shows that. But the Republicans keep that going along by showing a complete lack of backbone and then caving to the Democrats every time they push a little bit. How is that good for anything or anyone that loves this country? Folks, I can answer that one for you in just two words. It isn't. It's time to clean house and bring the Constitution back from the edge of oblivion that Obama and the other career politicians have it on by getting rid of the career politician. It's that easy. And before that happens, Obamacare must go. And it must go. That's one program that's going to prevent anything else. And then on top of that, we have our national debt that's over $18 trillion now. That's just sad. Our lineup of shows on CNM now have some great ones where we start the week on Sundays with The Michael Berryman Show, which is the old soldier of patriotism, and it airs from 4 to 6 p.m. on Sundays. American by Design has moved to Mondays with Jim Fisher, and it's now from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Mondays. Inside Tennessee with Dave Vance is now on Tuesdays from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern. The Real Radio Free America with Duke Brooks airs on Wednesdays from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern. And on Thursdays, we have the Liberty and Constitution Community with Matthew Opalisky from 8 to 10, also Eastern Time. And, of course, on Saturdays, you have yours truly, the infidel behind the silver CNM microphone of freedom with the voice of reason in this unreasonable world. CNM is growing, and we hope that everyone tells all their friends and acquaintances about our great shows and our great lineup, and now needs all the help she can get. Conservative Nation Media has the shows to help that happen, along with other shows that have to be there, because if not, the media will never give us the news that we need to have. We must never accept the world as we see it, but as God meant it to be. I am determined to always help in returning us to the recipe that made America great. I will not sit back on my couch and complain as I watch things happen, for that won't help this nation at all. We are at a crossroads in restoring our constitutional republic. The left does not anger me. I will not give them that kind of power over me. They have enough of that power already. We must take responsibility for our freedoms, for freedom is not free. It must be fought for with each succeeding generation. We must secure liberty by changing reality and promoting our attitudes and beliefs. We must rid ourselves of self-defeating attitudes and behaviors that we have and replace them with constructive ones. We must actively change culture, for that is where the liberals have it over us for now. And I know this can be done. Until next week, folks, God bless us all, and thank you for listening. And I hope to see you next week. And God bless everyone, God bless America, and God bless our troops. Thanks for listening. Have a good week. God bless you all.